Hey everybody, it's Sean Stewart, editor of the Little Shows That Couldn't podcast, and now new host of the Little Shows That Couldn't podcast. Unfortunately, Brett Medill is no longer with us. He has moved to Toronto. His co-op temp job has turned into a permanent full-time job. We wish him the best of luck here at Little Shows That Couldn't Studios. We hope he has all the good times in the world, and wish him the best. But the show must go on, you guys. I'm going to try to keep this ship going. I'm going to take the reins. I'm going to host this bad boy, but I'm not going to do it alone. So don't worry. You won't be putting up with me stuttering by myself. I'll be stuttering along with Steve Cartonen. You might recognize him. We've had him on the show a couple times in a couple of episodes. So, it's going to be Steve and I from now on. We're going to try to get some guests. But first, we're going to take a couple episodes just to find our synchronicity, so to speak, if we're going Stella terms. But, so brace yourselves. It's going to be a different kind of show. It's going to be the same show, but it's going to be a little different. But hopefully you'll check it out. So without further ado, here is part 5. Thanks for listening. Way back in the 1980s, secret government employees dug up famous guys and ladies and made them using genetic copies. Now they're prone to sexy teens. Now they're gonna make it if they try. Loving, learning, sharing, charging. Time to laugh and shiver and cry. This time, on a very special Little Shows That Couldn't, Cleo and Joan get into a fight, and somebody dies. I'm your new host, Sean Stewart. Welcome to Little Shows That Couldn't. Brett Medill is no longer with us, unfortunately. He's not dead, but before we talk about that, let's bring in some more people here. Now joining me is Mr. Stephen Cartonen. Say hello to the people, Steve.
Hey, everybody. Hello, Sean.
Okay, well, you lose points. I didn't hear to the people, Steve. So you lost points. We've established the points don't matter,
right?
But just know going in that you've lost points.
I'm already down.
A couple.
Well, points. I've always worked better from the deficit, so.
Well, I hope that only inspires you.
I'm eager to come back.
Okay, perfect. And we also have a blast from the past joining us from Medium Clever Studios in the studio on a microphone. The people's champ, Brant Bobby. Say hello to the people, Brant.
Hello there on Internet Land podcast people.
Okay, you're also losing points because I did not hear to the people. But
I clearly said people.
Did you? Well, I'll have to check the tapes. We'll check the tapes. We'll come back to you. And that'll be all well established and whatnot. So we're going to look at episodes 9 and 10 of Clone High. As you heard from the intro music, we are still examining Clone High. And Steve, I gotta say, I'm a little confused because at the end of episode 7, we got a little bit of a preview of episode 9, which is what we're currently looking at. So, what happened?
Yeah, I thought about that too.
Because even with the Raisins episode, that's showing clips of the Litter Kills episode that we'll be discussing later on today.
Yeah, it's like the previews for the next week's episode are out of sync with what order the show should be in. It's like right. They kind of jump around a little bit. And I thought it was like my copy of Clone High that was mislabeled, but I think
same with me.
Yeah, I think it's but since it's been happening to other people, I think it's something that maybe they just messed up the order, maybe they did it intentionally. And maybe the episodes were numbered incorrectly, but it's really hard to tell. So
it is because it's kind of confusing.
So you think maybe it's one of those situations like where the network wanted to air them out of order, like with Firefly, because they thought this episode was more exciting, so they wanted to come. And this one was here because it was Sweeps Week.
Possibly, but I mean, 5 episodes of Clone High didn't air on MTV, so I mean. I'm assuming it starts off with this episode, but I mean, how do we know now?
Yeah, having never seen them on TV when they were actually shown at the time,
right.
Like
we can't say for sure.
And I don't have the DVDs. I may or may not have gotten my copy less legitimately than some other people. I'm not going to say where, but it was definitely out of the back of a truck.
And you could find them in plenty of backs of trucks.
Exactly. Well, this was before the YouTube days when anyone could watch it. So,
for sure.
Yeah. I had terrible things to do to get these. Like, I thought it was like, you know, black market stuff.
A lot of dark days in Steve's past.
Yeah.
So this episode's name is A Room of One's Clone, The Pie of the Storm. And you guys, there is a storm brewing.
There is a storm a brewing.
A storm is a brewing in exclamation USA. And that storm, you guys, is an F5 conflict NATO.
I agree.
Because there's a lot of conflict in this episode.
It's pretty much, it's broken down into, three, four different conflicts?
Well, I think the main conflicts here are between Joan and Cleo, Scudsworth and Butler Tron, and JFK and Gandhi. So let's get into Joan and Cleo's, because that's kind of the main focus of this episode. Joan and Toots lose their house to a fire.
While the storm is a-brewing.
While the storm is a-brewing.
Struck by lightning.
It's flood-proof, tornado-proof, we assume. Every other kind of proof, earthquake-proof, not fireproof.
Yeah. So.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. The vengeful hand of God comes down and takes away everything of Joan and Toots, for some unknown reason, but forcing them to relocate to under the bleachers of the school.
Of all places. Like, there's no shelters, apparently, in exclamation USA.
And
just bleachers.
And no other friends offered to, like... yeah. Like, all of, like... Does Toots not have friends in the community? Like, you think he would. Like, he may be a blind man.
Right.
But he should still at least, you know, be able to, like, crash on a couch.
You'd think someone would open their couch up for Toots. By the way, Toots plays that blind card way too much.
Yeah.
I mean, look, he's a blind man, okay? We get it. But that's not all you are, Toots. You also play the clarinet. Yeah. You also drive, which
he constantly talks
like
about.
Like, magical for a blind person to do.
And he's also...
successfully.
And he's a foster parent, so...
Of course.
Yeah, he's not... He shouldn't be defined by his blindness, but he continues to do it.
But he'll keep playing that blind card. But, eventually, Toots moves into the woman he's banging, which happens to be Cleo's foster mom.
Drunk foster mom doesn't seem to have a name.
Yeah. Her name seems to be Cleo's drunk foster mom.
And drunk's always in there, too.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't heard it referenced otherwise. Like, it was just always...
It's just always Cleo's
drunk
foster mom.
Sorry,
Cleo's drunk foster mom.
Yeah. Yeah. And that forces Joan to move in with, you know, her arch enemy, I guess, at this
pretty
point.
Pretty much, yeah. Cleo. I mean, it's pretty much established they don't like each other.
Oh, yeah.
And Abe is attempting to referee this whole fiasco and just being incredibly unsuccessful at it. Like, he tries some mediation exercises.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes to a seminar to try and... You know, learn some tricks and some things to help. And he feels so compelled, I guess, because of his genetic disposition.
for sure.
But, he tries to get them to do a trust fall. Then he walks away without observing the results. Clearly not working out for either of them.
Yeah. He had so much trust in both Cleo and Joan that he just didn't have to see what was going to happen. And I'm assuming bad things happened because it sounded like a big crash.
Yeah.
Wasn't good. Wasn't good at all.
And then the second conflict that comes up for like the main one is between Scudsworth and Mr. Butlertron.
That's true. Very true. They Scudsworth gets invited to the principal's ball, is that correct?
Yeah. For the first time I think he's invited. It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Big deal, you guys. And Butlertron assumes he is going to be going to this as well. And he does at first until the Bureau of Shadowy Figures is...
I think it's Council.
Council of Shadowy Figures? That sounds right. The Council of Shadowy Figures gives Scudsworth a E-Cybo Pooch. E-Cybo Pooch. I'm sorry, I said that wrong.
Yeah, the gift that's expensive yet tells a person that you know absolutely nothing about them.
And makes an exceptional gift.
Yeah.
And naturally, Butlertron gets jealous of this new robot because, he's a robot too.
And it doesn't help that Scudworth immediately goes about how much he loves this robot and how he's always wanted a robot to love, despite the fact Mr. B is right there.
And has been with him for, like, ever.
Yeah. Yeah, even in the opening credits.
Yeah, when, we just found out.
When Scudworth is digging up the famous guys and ladies, he's got a younger-looking Mr. B
in the background. Mustache, yeah, no mustache. No mustache. Yeah, digging up famous guys and ladies with Mr. Scudworth. Good times. Good times. We also get a dolphin watch in Scudworth's office when he gets super excited and tosses Butlertron across his office room and crashes into a dolphin or something. So that's fun.
Yeah, the idea of guests of putting a dolphin or at least the dolphin sound into every episode is still going strong.
Still going strong. It wasn't in the first or third episode, but we've managed to find it in every other episode. So, so we'll just keep that tradition alive.
Yeah, yeah. I like
as we go through Clone High.
Dolphin Watch.
Dolphin Watch 2015.
Do you guys have like a fancy sound effect, like some splashing, or maybe
we have no sound effects.
Perhaps a dolphin sound.
Maybe. But we should get sound effects.
I was gonna say, or we could just like get the dolphin sound right off the show and
Let's spend like 5 minutes Googling dolphin sounds because that audience members love that.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I think this podcast would really pop more if you just like had like dolphin sound and then you play the
dolphin sounds. Yeah, yeah, we'll get on that right now. So Brent, you start Googling dolphin sounds and we will we'll continue our look at episode 9.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. You don't have to actually Google. don't actually Google.
Yeah. And then the third conflict of the episode between Gandhi and JFK is pretty much the one of least substance.
Easily.
It just happens easily. Like Gandhi's standing there trying to make jokes that JFK is making, just trying to be part of it.
To be fair, it's the same joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand people, you know, copying other people's jokes is kind of frowned upon in the joke community, and the melon as classic as the melons joke is, it's definitely JFK's.
Yeah. I guess he's got that specific genre, so understandable when someone's trying to nose in on his
incredibly noticeable innuendo
boob puns.
Yeah, seems to be his style. In my pants. And by pants, I mean penis, et cetera, et cetera. You know how JFK sounds. We're in episode 9 now. You know it. But yeah, Gandhi kind of steps all over his joke. And then later is in his peeping bush outside of Cleo's house.
Yeah. Well, now that Joan and Cleo are in the same bedroom, Gandhi figures he's going to be able to see some hot babe on chick action.
Yeah.
And as he's spying with his binoculars into the window, JFK is right there, which is like they should have noticed when one got there before, like as the other did, but because it's small bush.
Yeah.
But they.
And the window's wide open. There's like the curtains were down at one point, but
Yeah. And they're out there, they're trying to peep. And of course, that leads to a fight. And JFK is going to win because he's huge compared to Gandhi.
Well, he's clearly bigger and stronger than Gandhi. And Abe just kind of watches it all.
Yeah.
Storm's a brewing, you guys.
Yeah.
Storm's a brewing.
Yeah. So when Abe finally goes to, he sees all this conflict and he's like, all right, now I've got to help my friends. He goes and he gets his mediation classes. Not enough. He goes to some kind of theme park to see what the real Abe Lincoln would say. And by that, he means a robo-animatronic Abe Lincoln.
Well, it was kind of like a log ride, but like the most unimpressive log ride in history. Like, it seems to start off with a lecture and then ends with a gunshot or something.
Well,
does John Wilkes Booth just come out of the woodworks and just shoot whoever's in the log? Or
I guess so, because the final stint of the log ride is you are now entering Ford's Theater, and there's just a drop and then a gunshot sound. So
it seems to me like if I was a young Abe Lincoln, like a ride, like that is the last ride I would want to go on, because you die at the end.
Yeah,
like, yeah, for sure.
Was that established beforehand? I feel like it wasn't. Like, it seemed like he was there primarily for the lecture of churros and
the Mexican theme mediation. Park ride.
Yeah.
Of Mr. Lincoln's wild or log ride turns out to be, you know, like helpful, but also very heavy on try the churros.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if young Abe knew it was there'd be a potential gunshot wound, especially for him. But that's kind of akin to JFK going to the diner that is called the Grassy Knoll.
I suppose, yeah.
Also probably the last place he'd want to be, but maybe maybe he doesn't know his own history.
So I feel like we didn't end Joan and Cleo's little kerfuffle because they end up painting their room very sitcom style like, except they do it horizontally instead of vertically. So Joan seems to be stuck on the top of the room while Cleo is doing her damnedest to stay at the bottom. And things are not working out for those two. Yeah. And eventually just devolves into a pillow fight.
Which I know, even though they're cartoon characters, maybe it's just the idea of girls pillow fight, but I still, every time, like, I see it and I go, yeah.
It does it for you?
A little bit. I'm not going to turn it off during the pillow fight scene.
Fair enough.
I'm just going to say.
Fair enough. But then the pillow fight turns into like a full-on Benny Hill sketch. Like Gandhi and JFK come in. They snap Cleo's... Well, Gandhi snaps Cleo's bra. Then they end up at the pie factory or pie, whatever, the pie place.
It's a pie factory, yeah.
Was it a pie factory? Yeah. And then they just start throwing pies everywhere.
The pie factory where the principal's ball is being held.
Right.
So bringing all the characters and all the conflicts together to finally end...
The one messy pie fight.
Yeah.
There were all kinds of pies in that factory. There were blueberry pies, there were cream pies, there were like chicken pot pies.
A fully cooked chicken pot pie, which Gandhi happens to come across Scudworth and ask if he would like some.
And why not?
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the fact that it's scalding hot, why not?
Yeah. See, it seems like a very generic sort of factory. Like, I mean, I'm not an expert in, you know, pie science, but... Are different kinds of pies normally manufactured in a facility like that, or would you have chicken pot pies being made next to coconut cream pies, or what? I don't know. This seems suspect.
I would call pie science pience, giving it its actual credible name. Yeah. But I imagine like pie factories switch it up every once in a while. Maybe not as extreme as like blueberry to chicken pot pie. Like I imagine meat pie factories would be their own kind of factory.
Yeah,
but I imagine they'd switch it up every once in a while.
I think it depends on the size of the company, where they're expanded into all pies,
right,
or they're just focused on the dessert pies. I mean, I know if I'm running my pie factory, I'm going to want to get my hands in every type, every flavor.
Absolutely. That's just how you make a monopoly.
You want to get your fingers in everything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All up in the pies.
All them pies. Yeah. Get all up in them pies.
Yeah. And so then, after everyone starts throwing pies, you know, getting pied, Abe tries once again to mediate this conflict.
Unsuccessfully.
Again. And actually, it's a funny thing throughout the episode. He does nothing. He doesn't actually succeed
doesn't
in helping anyone
thing.
Or anything. It's the storm that is brewing the whole time. Finally, let's go, and the rain comes down. And washes away all the bad feelings.
And the pie.
And the pie. So I kind of thought it funny how Abe, you know, just, he totally failed. He's just...
He did.
He's
like epic. Like epic fail.
Yeah.
That's where the definition comes from.
He Lincoln fails hard.
Yeah. He Lincoln failed the shit out of that. But yeah. And then Toots signs us off.
Yep.
Giving us little updates from how the pies were washed away and how everybody reconciled in some form. Yep. Cleo and Joan's conflict is now a more healthier, passive-aggressive conflict, we assume.
Yeah, they went from overt hate to under-the-surface hate.
Yeah, exactly. Like a normal human being would do.
Yeah. So they still wildly hate each other,
oh,
but
yeah,
they're just not going to let, you know, it come to the surface and have to be dealt with by anyone else. They'll just enjoy it between the two of them.
For sure, for sure. Brant, any final thoughts on this episode?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't really seen much of this show. I watched a couple episodes a long, long time ago. I've really only seen this episode and the other episode we watched today. And I have to say, like, is it always so unrealistic?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Very unrealistic. Well, I mean, it's a cartoon.
I'm having trouble believing that, first of all, the clone thing.
Okay. Now we're just picking some nits, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just not...
I'm not on board with the whole idea of these clones in high school.
How do you get live clones from dead people?
Yeah. And not only that, but people from all kinds of different centuries when there wouldn't have been all that much genetic material. You're right, Brent. I don't think...
You know what? I'm giving you your points back, Brent.
Are we to believe that like all these people have given their consent for this to happen? For them to be cloned?
No, it was the board of shadowy figures has government employees were just like...
Well, Scudworth, he's like their only employee.
No, the shadowy board.
Right.
Whoever they are in the government, they decided to make all these clones, man. It's a Area 51 kind of operation happening here, and it just happens to take place in this town with these people who have taken in clones as their foster kids. Or step kids,
however.
How does
that work? Like, do they have to sign something? Do they get money for that?
That's what I always wondered, too. Did they set up the...
These are questions that were never answered in this season.
And never asked. It wasn't until Brad just now.
Well, someone has to ask those questions.
Someone had to, that's right. That's true. Yeah. Then we get into episode 10, you guys.
Yeah.
Litter kills, literally. I like how we get a viewer discretion advisement at the beginning of this episode because there's some graphic violence in this episode.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, it's... If you count choking to death on your own blood when a plastic bag's wrapped around your head, then yeah, I guess that's graphic.
A little bit.
But
yeah, we get an opening. Someone's going to die this episode. And it's definitely not Luke Perry.
Yeah.
It's going to be someone else that we've established over the course of 10 episodes. Or will it be?
Yeah. Out of all our regularly occurring characters, and it's going through the list of Abe and Joan and JFK, and then, hey, who's that? Well, of course, it's Ponce.
Ponce de Leon.
Yeah, voiced by Luke Perry.
Looking extremely similar to Luke Perry as well.
And apparently he's been around this whole time. He's JFK's best buddy.
Best buds, JFK.
There's even a great pun right out of the door of the episode of Ponce cracks a joke, and I believe it's Caesar who says, "Oh, Ponce, you're such a regular character." Because
he is. He's been around forever.
Yeah, totally not there just for this episode killed.
Not at all.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
he never shows up in anything else. Like, he's just, you know how some shows would try to hook you in with, like, we're going to kill a main character, but then, you know, it's just somebody who you've never seen before.
Right.
It's Ponce. Ponce de Leon. And the way he dies is pretty much...
Oh, my God. It is the most graphic, absurd death I've ever seen.
Yeah. Litter kills.
Yeah, man.
In exclamation USA.
Well, let's set up some plot lines here. JFK and Ponce, best of buds, just can't put that litter in the trash.
Yep.
They just got to throw it everywhere.
Because it's cool.
Because littering's cool.
They are the coolest guys in school, and everybody else is just like, yeah, littering.
Yep. Just throwing their trash out like you should.
Yeah.
Like a normal dickhead. But, I mean, what can you do? And I feel like Ponce was kind of going on like an upward curve. Like, he seemed like he wanted to find himself. He wanted to get, like, a personal connection with everybody he knows. And JFK just won't have any of it.
Yeah.
He was completely against that.
Yeah, I feel you on that one, Sean. It's Like, for the short amount of time Ponce is even on screen and talking, he's actually experiencing more character growth than, than like some of these other long-running characters.
Totally.
So, yeah, and JFK, he just wants none of that. He tells him, he's like, you're talking like a broad.
He wants to litter for life.
Yeah, there's, and that's...
And they end up hating each other.
Yeah, right at the, they get into a fight. Ponce says, I wish I never knew you. I hate you, JFK, kind of thing.
Yep.
And it's the kind of thing that you wouldn't want the last thing you'd ever say to one of your good friends to be.
For sure.
Unfortunately for Ponce, it happens to be the exact last thing he ever says when his hands become bound in a six-pack plastic rings.
Uncut, by the way. Yeah. Incredibly unsafe.
Yeah, as we all know. And then the wind begins to whip up candy wrappers, and he receives a multitude of candy wrapper cuts across his face, his whole body.
And then a plastic bag wraps around his head, and he falls onto a bottle with his skull, and he drowns in his own blood.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, he gets a head wound when this plastic bag is sealed around his throat, and he drowns in a bag of his own blood.
I'd just like to point out, whenever Ponce would leave a scene, he'd always say, if I don't see you again, goodbye. And everybody always calls him on it, like, oh, yeah. Ponce, you always say that, you silly, normal, regular character, you.
Yeah, like, apparently his thing that he does is that he often just bids final farewells when he's leaving the room. Yeah. And for this episode, that's incredibly convenient.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's some of his final words to everyone.
And JFK does not handle his death well at all. He is a mess emotionally, physically, physiologically, all the
psychically.
Yeah. He's a mess. And nobody can console him except Cleo, which Abe does not like at all.
Yeah. As they've moved quite a bit forward in their relationship.
I think he's finally undoing the bra.
Yeah.
At this point.
And as we all know, a critical point in any relationship.
That's like, yeah. So, yeah, JFK gets super bummed about his best buddy Ponce's death. Two peas in a pod. Was that a temporary tattoo he had, or?
I don't know. It looked kind of permanent. The two peas in a pod.
We never see it again, but.
Yeah, it was definitely. But, yeah, like Ponce, I think it was there to just drive home the point of how close they were. Like,
yeah,
if we never
sure.
see it again, it's like, okay, same thing like Ponce, but. Yeah, JFK is super devastated.
Yeah. It sucks. It sucks. It sucks losing your best friend that you've known forever.
Yeah. And I just want to say, like, there's a point where JFK is screaming, I am perfectly calm, which is, I just love that joke. Like, when you're freaking out, yelling, I am perfectly
Everything's
calm.
Everything's fine! Yeah, it's great. We also get introduced to Glenn the janitor, who happens to be Ponce's foster dad. We haven't even seen him up to this point, but he seems like a really happy-go-lucky kind of guy.
Yeah,
Scudworth hates him
unabashedly
for no reason.
Yeah, he's in the room. Scudworth wants him to leave. As soon as he leaves, he's like, "What an asshole!"
Just seething.
He's got
always doing his job, tidying up all the papers everywhere.
Into nice little stacks that, according to Scudworth, are utter chaos.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's poor Glenn. And then, yeah, he shows up as the janitor, just having kind of a hard time from Scudworth. And then we find out that he's giving the eulogy at his foster son, stepson's wake.
Yep.
Which, of course, Scudworth comes in again and immediately asks him to go clean up some vomit.
Yeah,
in
there's
the bathroom.
Some puke. Your son will still be dead when you've cleaned up the puke. So just come back after that. Thanks, Scudworth, you dick.
Yeah, it's a pretty rough time for Janitor Glenn.
I'd say so.
And also for Gandhi in this episode.
Yeah, Gandhi gets it pretty hard, unintentionally. He goes shopping for an orange warm-up suit and eventually finds his way into
Death Row.
Into Death Row. Yeah.
He's standing on the side of the road talking to another guy in an orange jumpsuit who he also assumes is just warms up.
Right.
But it's death row inmates cleaning up the highway, and when one of them dives away, Gandhi, of course, is you came with 10, you got to leave with 10. So Gandhi's put on the bus, and off he goes to maximum security prison.
To be waited to be executed, I suppose.
Well, waiting for the shower scene, which is the biggest problem he's facing. And,
For sure.
It was a nice little thing they did on the show where they totally turned around from a shower rape scene, which was clearly coming right up until the point of when they, even when they say, let's initiate him. And then
that sounds like he's just getting right opened up.
Yeah. But,
but
no.
It didn't happen.
He's getting hip hip hooray cheers thrown in the air.
You know, like regular maximum security prison.
And then we find out all the guys there are kind of sensitive and good at listening because Gandhi's heard about the news about Ponce.
And he's not happy either.
Yeah, and as he explains to the inmates, he says, my friend died. He was white and privileged. And then, of course, the audible gasps from the inmates.
That's great.
Yeah. And so they all agree to help him break out so he can, get out there or pay his respects. And
if he was just white, would that have been more or less shocking?
Just white?
Yeah,
less
not privileged at all.
Less shocking,
I imagine that'd be a less of a shocker.
Yeah.
Because white people die all the time.
That's true.
Like, they just, there's probably someone who just died right now that we don't even know.
It might even have been the white privileged teenager dying, too. Because that's the biggest shock.
Yeah, that's true, too. A white privileged teenager, that's heavy news.
Yeah, so he moves the rest of the inmates to tears, and they agree to help him break out. And
then they all clean up the trash.
Gandhi brings the inmates, and by this time, Abe and Joan have convinced everyone that littering isn't cool, and that now they're going to clean up this scourge.
If Ponce knew he was going to die by litter, he would have cleaned up too.
Yeah. He definitely didn't like it after it had murdered him.
Yeah. That was definitely a big con.
Yeah.
Big negative point in Ponce's life.
And then, now that everything's all cleaned up, we get to see that there's no need for the janitor anymore. And Scudworth couldn't be happier to fire him.
And that's the end of Glenn's story, I guess.
Well,
will we see him again? I don't know. We haven't seen him before.
He was quite devastated, though, having lost his stepson or foster son, and then his job, what appeared to be on the same day, if not at least on the same weekend.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
yeah, it was definitely a short-term position at Clone High for Glenn, the janitor.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts there, Brant?
Not really. I mean, I think you guys covered it pretty well. I would have liked to see more of Ponce, but I mean, I guess I'll have to go back and watch some of the earlier episodes so I can get him and really experience his character arc.
Ponce? Yeah, well, yeah, you can do that. Yeah,
yeah. Check him out. Really good. He has a couple good moments in some episodes.
Yeah, for sure.
But don't look too hard for him. I mean, he's there, but.
I mean, I imagine a lot of shows do this thing where, a background character is at the beginning, they kind of flesh it out more. Orange is the New Black did that, and Breaking Bad did that,
For sure.
So I'm looking forward to seeing how they work with this character from the beginning. Yeah.
And as we all know, Clone High is definitely on the same level as Orange is the New Black and Breaking Bad.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's up there.
It's
up there.
It was up there for me.
I have a Dolphin Super Team. I remember seeing a Dolphin, but I can't remember where I saw it.
I believe the Dolphin was at the end when JFK was calling nature to help clean up.
Yes.
You're right. Yeah,
Dolphin that's where the super riding team came an from. Orangutan.
Yeah.
Of course.
Good call. Good call. You know what? You're getting Steve's points now.
Yeah.
That one.
All right.
Curses.
Can I do anything with these points? Can I spend them?
No. Well, the points don't matter. So.
Oh, okay.
So.
But Brant, if you take my points again, we're going to have to have words off mic.
So I guess there's only one question left to ask you guys, and that is, who's the MVP for these two episodes? Who's your favorite character?
I think for the first, for episode 9, with the storm of brewing, it's Mr. Butlertron.
Okay.
Bringing, saving Scudworth in the end. against the E Cybo Pooch,
who turned out to be a spy. We didn't touch on that.
Yeah, that was well. But we kind of missed that, but if you're watching the episodes along with us,
you understand
and,
what's going on. Yeah,
yeah. Mr. B, he does a little bit of singing in the beginning. Just hearing his voice, it just lights up my day. I really identify with his tones.
Fair enough. How about yourself, Brant?
I don't know. I'm gonna have to go with Gandhi on this one.
Gandhi.
Yeah, he's a solid supported character. I think, I mean, he doesn't get the spotlight, but I think he does a good job in, you know, kind of keeping everything else together, just supporting everyone else's roles.
Cool. I like that answer.
And you, Sean?
I think I'm going to go Ponce de Leon, you guys.
Nice.
Because his death is something I'll never forget. It was both graphic, hilarious, and it ruined JFK's life, and JFK kind of sucks, so... Yeah.
And as he says, he's not accustomed to tragedy,
right?
Being a Kennedy.
Because, Kennedys never have any tragedy in their lives at all. So, that's episodes 9 and 10, you guys. We did it.
Right on.
We did it. I hope you continue listening. We're just working out the kinks now. We'll be back with a vengeance next episode and take it from there. See where we can go with this. And you can follow us on Twitter at Little Shows Pod. You can follow me at Sean Stewman. Brent, what's your Twitter handle?
I am not currently on Twitter.
Okay. Brent's not on Twitter. Steve just got a smartphone, so Twitter is imminent for Steve.
If I can figure it out, I will get the Twitter. But then, I just want everyone to know that these new smartphones, they're not as smart as they want everyone to think. I don't care for them.
Well, they're too posh is their problem.
Yeah,
they're too...
I suppose if I could figure out the Twitter, I'd probably be happier with it because everyone else is on Twitter and everyone else in the world is happy. So
it's true. Littleshowspod.com. Check us out and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.